Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm delighted that you could be with us today. You know, each of us wants to do what we can to make the world a better place. Isn't that true? One wonderful thing about my own work, which I'm doing out of love, is that so often I meet earnest people, sincere, wonderful people who have found something they can do to improve the lives of others, and they are doing it now with all their hearts. I love that, and I meet these people often. I want you to know more of them because, frankly, they serve as an inspiration to all of us. A few months ago, we hosted Vincent James, who is what I think of as an ambassador for music. He and his wife, Joanne Pierdomenico, have been making music, teaching music, and advocating for music education for children as a whole mission of their lives for more than 30 years. Actually, music seems to be much more prominent in the greater reality we return to after death than it is here. So if you'd like to listen to Seek Reality to learn more about the afterlife, music is a legitimate afterlife topic for us to discuss, and we'll do some of that today. But what I love about this inspiring couple, Vincent and Joanne, isn't so much the afterlife connection as it is their drive to increase the role of beautiful music in our lives right now. Vincent and Joanne are the authors of 88 Plus Ways Music Can Change Your Life. I guess you kept adding stories. There are more than 100 now, but I guess it started at 88. They're the founders of a nonprofit organization that called Keep Music Alive, and their stated mission is to promote the value of music in children's education, in therapy, and in advancing our happiness as a society. Boy, that's a big mission. They've launched two international music holidays called Teach Music Week and Kids Music Day, and they've partnered with hundreds of music schools in the U.S., Canada, and elsewhere to offer free lessons to new students, to hold events celebrating kids playing music, and just to make music part of everybody's life. Vincent's partner in working in life is Joanne Pierdomenico, and she is with us today. Welcome, Joanne. I'm delighted that you're here.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so excited to be a part of your show and to talk with you and actually learn more from you and as you are from me.
That's the beauty of this. I have learned so much from the people really that I have interviewed, and I've made friends of so many of them, and that it has such this the reason I do Seek Reality, everyone. I tell you I do it for you, but I actually do it mainly for me because it enriches my life so much to meet people like Joanne and so many others. So there's a little secret told. Now we're going to talk about the role of music in the afterlife, and I think, though, the most important thing to do is to just talk about music, period, because there's so much I don't know about it, and I'm sure other people don't either. And especially if you have children or if you're trying to enrich your own life, it's so important that you understand the role music can play. But first, let's talk about you. How did music become so essential to your life? I mean, as I was sort of reading through things and getting prepared, I was thinking, now this is a chicken and egg thing. Did you first meet Vincent, or did you love music and that brought you to meet Vincent? How did that get started?
Wow. So I could do a whole hour on just how the beginning of this started.
Oh dear. Well, if we could just get the cliff notes.
Yes. Okay. So for me, music started a very long time ago when I was a very little girl. And music, although I am not a musician, has always played an important part in my life. When I was in like fourth grade, and our school district had a music education program, and I was invited to play, you know, to learn to play an instrument. So I thought, oh my goodness. And I saw these violins and they were absolutely beautiful. And I thought, I want to play a violin. I want to play a violin. Yeah. So I took this case home. Now I was always a small child. I was always the smallest one in the class. So this violin case was probably, you know, more than half my height.
Wow.
And so I brought it home and I showed it to my mom and she said, okay. Now, which is very surprising because my mom didn't like anything that made noise. And you know, if you ever heard a beginner with a violin, it's like, ah!
Yes, I took grandchildren to violin lessons. I know just what you mean.
Yeah, so I was just like over the moon happy that I was able to start to learn to play the violin. Unfortunately, after a few weeks, my mom told me that I had to return the violin because I was disturbing the neighbors. We lived in a very small apartment building. And back then, you know, people didn't have air conditioning and it was always windows open. And so I would do my and apparently it didn't go over well with the neighbors. And my mom said, you know, we really have to be considerate of our neighbors.
Oh, dear.
So I gave that up. And then when I was in middle school, I had the opportunity to participate in a chorus, which I was so excited for. I got to do the winter concert and I absolutely loved it. I got to sing my heart out with all these amazing, beautiful holiday songs. But then after the concert ended, my mom told me that I wasn't going to be able to participate in the spring concert because we couldn't afford it. We were very poor growing up. And, you know, transportation and nice clothing, you know, for those types of events were things that we really couldn't afford. So I had to stop doing that. But what I will say is in middle school was when I really began a love for music. And that is because I had the most awesome music teacher. When I was in middle school, that's when I learned about the Beatles and, you know, Sgt. Pepper's. Yeah, I never even heard of the Beatles until then. And, you know, so that was the late 70s. And he was just an amazing teacher. Like, he taught us the coolest things about music with current music in addition to the traditional music. So we got the best of both worlds. His name was Mr. Poole. And I never told him how much I loved him as a teacher and how profound of a difference he made in me wanting to learn more about music while in school. And I wish I had, but I'm sure he got that from a lot of people because he was an amazing teacher. So fast forward, if I can, to 1990, I had the opportunity to go to a benefit where they were raising money for a local food bank, and there was going to be live performances there. And it turned out that a friend of mine that I was pen pals with in high school was going to be performing at that benefit. And I thought, oh my gosh, he used to send me tickets to go see him perform in New York, but I never made it up there. Oh. So it was just like, I was like, oh, this is the perfect opportunity for me to go meet my pen pal. Well, I went up there and I had an opportunity. I got to meet my pen pal, and that was the night that I met Vincent.
Oh, dear. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it, like, everything happens for a reason, right?
It does. Oh, totally. That everyone, just parenthetically, when you look back at your life, you see so many things that seem coincidental. Mm-hmm. Our guides are always making sure that the person we have chosen for our life partner is going to be presented to us repeatedly. So if we miss that chance, believe me, they will make sure there are other chances. So isn't that wonderful? So was he seems to always have been deeply involved with music. He was then. Was he thinking about being an ambassador even then?
Not really. No, because his life was on a different path at that time. At the time, he was actually just releasing his own music. And so he was promoting his own music. And just before that was, you know, managing bands and things like that. So he actually, you know, after we met, we became really good friends. We were friends for a while and then we fell in love, of course. And then I started helping him, like, with his music. We actually were part owners of a recording studio. He was the founder of the Philadelphia Songwriters Association here in Philly. So there was a lot of things that he was involved in, you know, all having to do with music.
I have to just say, it's cute to see them together, Vincent and Joanne, because she really does that. She's always supporting him. I think you're the most supportive wife I have ever known. I just have to say that parenthetically. Aww. Now, we're almost at a break, and one of the things I want to do is I've been thinking about questions to ask you. When I talked to Vincent, I just didn't realize how much fun it was going to be to talk about music. But as I've been thinking about talking with you, I've got questions to ask you that I think are probably on other people's minds too, because you say music is important, right? It's important to our lives in many ways. Sure. And so it has to have like a genetic basis. It has to have all kinds of bases. And what I want to do is talk some about that. And I wish I could take call-ins because I'm sure everybody else is saying, Roberta, ask this, Roberta, ask that. I just have a few questions that I'd like to ask you. One of the things I'd like to know is whether we are born with an instinct for music. Do you think that we are?
I think we all inherently have a gift. And I also think we all inherently have the ability to pull out things from ourselves that we didn't know that we had, including music, because you'll have people who, you know, maybe as children never learned to play an instrument, but somewhere deep inside always wanted to learn how. And then, you know, and then later in life, you know, as an adult, whether they're in the 40s, their 60s, their 80s, they actually decide to take up an instrument. And I really feel like when a person takes up an instrument at whatever point in time in their life, that's because that's when it was right for them. Not maybe when they were a kid, not maybe when they were a teenager, but when the time was right, when we're most receptive to learning.
How would you define music? What is music? I mean, there are so many different kinds of music.
I think it depends on the person, really, because different styles of music, different genres of music appeal to different people for different reasons. You know, classical music is beautiful, right? And like I could listen to that, you know, especially like if I'm, you know, going through a rough time or I'm really stressed out, because it will calm me. But my favorite music really is pop and rock from the 80s. So I think we are drawn to the type of music that most interests us, because I feel like it benefits us in some shape, way, or form. You know, like I envy people who are really into classical music, because I think it's beautiful, but it's not exactly my thing. But I really envy people who truly see the beauty of what classical music is.
But even within classical music, I would just point out there are lots of kinds. I love true classical music that's very emotional. I mean, Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky. We used to be subscribers to the symphony when we lived in the Boston area. We would go to because it was always beautiful stuff. Then it started to be a lot of modern stuff, which to me sounded like, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard, and we stopped subscribing. But I'm sure it was all classical music. It's just, and within rock, there are so many different kinds of music. I mean, my favorite music is the 60s doo-wop. I mean, I listen to it all the time. The Flamingos and Marvin Gaye and all of these people to me are the greatest musicians who ever lived. I don't care what anybody says.
They are amazing.
so you know, this is, we all have these very idiosyncratic tastes, and they're not always consistent either. They're the things maybe that, I don't know. For me, it's all the emotional music is what I love. I'm having trouble with modern music because it doesn't seem to have the same emotional level. But we do seem to have a music instinct. I really think that we do. I mean, people... If there, yes, we all have different tastes, but if music is sort of resonates at all, I think we all kind of can hear that. It's universal in a way that no language could possibly be universal. And I think that's part of what's good about it. But now, all right, if I have a child, I mean, because I tried with my own children to get them to play piano, then play violin. The only success I ever had was with one grandchild who played the violin and then the cello, and then she's now not doing that either. And she plays ukulele. That's all she plays now.
Oh, that's funny.
So how, if you have a child that you think has musical talent, or you think it would just help that, because apparently it organizes our brain too in ways, right? So it's
right.
It's a healthy for children. How do you make that child feel that this is what they want to do without having to be a tiger mother?
Actually, I would entice them with music that they currently enjoy. If they have a favorite band or a favorite artist, let them know that, you know, we want you to learn the building blocks so that you can play all these amazing songs that are your favorites, that are the most meaningful to you. But you have to start somewhere. So let's start with the building blocks. Let's get you some piano lessons or guitar or violin. Entice them with what they like.
Entice them with what they like, but you're also saying give them a goal. It isn't, the goal isn't to practice this piece for next week's lesson. The goal is I want the power to be able to play music on my own. I want the power maybe to perform or even to perform for the family. I mean, my mother-in-law, who lived with us for the last 7 or 8 years of her life, and she died in her mid-90s, was an expert piano player. And I can't tell you what comfort it was for her. She would play that piano all day long. She had an organ. She would play her organ. I missed the music when we lost her as much as I missed her, frankly. And she was playing a lot of old songs, like from the 20s and 30s, because that was her vintage. And it was wonderful. So I can see that you also could help a child to understand that music is a companion. If you have the power to play music, you can build on that, and it'll be a companion to you, even that will take you through life, even if maybe, you know, your husband has died before, or you don't have so many people in your life. So, all right, giving them a goal, helping them understand, and I would think also telling them what they're doing is very good. Children seem to want to be praised as much as anyone wants to be praised. So even though it doesn't sound that good right now, it's screeching and scritching. We made much of my granddaughter that ended up actually playing the violin. And I think that was one reason she stuck with it. She did have some talent, but she ended up playing beautiful things. And when you tell your children that, I think that it's like when they bring you a drawing. But it's music is so innate to us. I mean, babies listen to it, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I know, for years and years and years, my youngest one is 17. And I used to play music all the time. I would play, there was like baby lullabies, like before she was born, when she was in utero, I would play the music loud enough, hoping that she would be able to hear it. And then, of course, after they were born, I played music all the time. And, you know, Vincent, he played the piano almost daily. So, you know, our children were very fortunate to be able to have music all around them. And I would say, you know, for, you know, young mothers or expectant mothers, play the music, you know, because, it is cultural. It can be very cultural. But you got to start somewhere. So why not start while they're in utero?
Yes. And that's another point. I have read that actually baby books say that because they can hear your voice. They resonate to their mother's voice immediately after they are born. But they also resonate to the music that they heard when they were in their mother's womb. I think that's wonderful and beautiful. Now, how is music important therapeutically? Because I know that's one of the things you both advocate for.
Yeah, I can give you a couple of examples if you like. I never really understood the benefits of music therapy until I actually witnessed them for myself. And the first thing was when my mother had a stroke a few years back, she couldn't speak. She basically had a whisper. She just, her vocal cords could not really push out what we, you know, she needed to be able to speak normally like she had prior to the stroke. And so, and when she actually had her stroke, they didn't even realize that she had one, even though I believed that she had had a stroke. So I went home that night, did research, believing that it was a stroke, went into the hospital the next day, gave them all the reasons why I believed it was a stroke, and had her tested. And sure enough, she had a stroke. So what I did was So I did my own little research because they did not have a music therapy program there at the hospital. So I did my own little research on the internet. I love Google. It's my best friend these days.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And I did, you know, the research, and I thought, you know, let me do my own little form of music therapy, although it's not legitimate, as, you know, people in the medical field would call it. But I started by playing music that was familiar to her. Then I started playing music that I played when I was a teenager, and she probably couldn't stand because I had it all the way up, you know, the volume up.
Right.
But it was because I also wanted to help her retain memory, because when she had her stroke, she also lost a lot of memory.
Yeah.
So I was using it, you know, for her familiarity of music, you know, to her, of music to me. And then I played a variety of different styles of music, and this was all from my smartphone. And when she would, when she was sleeping, I would play classical music or a new age music very low, but that so that she would have the flow of this beautiful music. And then one day, when she was sleeping and I was playing this music, the physical therapist came in the room and he saw what I was doing. And he actually had a tear in his eye. And he says, oh, my goodness. He says, do you know how much I wish that people would research the benefit of music for stroke patients?
Wow.
And
wow.
I have goosebumps right now just, you know, reminiscing about it.
Yes.
And he says, keep doing what you're doing, whatever it is. It can't be wrong. And he says it can excuse me. He said it can only benefit your mother. It can't hurt her in any way. So that's what I did. And I was able to help my mom come out of, because she was in a sleep state an awful lot. And they wanted to pull her out of that, because if she continued that way, she just would have went downhill. But with the music, we used it also with her physical therapy to help her to be able to, you know, move, give her the energy to want to move a little more so that she could start to learn to walk again. So it was amazing. That was my first personal experience with music therapy.
Now, did she really improve as a result?
Absolutely. She came out of that sleep state. They put her into like an acute physical therapy program, but they also used music with it. And then also with mine, you know, and singing to my mom, believe me, I can't carry a tune, but she always loved when I sang to her. So I would sing to her and it would move her body, right? Which would make her a little more flexible. So when she went to do music therapy, she had more movement.
Wow. So anyone can do this, right? I would think that all kinds of brain injuries and anything that interrupts our mental and emotional health would be helped by music, just because it's beautiful and it interacts with us on an emotional as well as a physical level. And I can see it. I really can. One of the things that struck me, anyone who knows about my history knows that a lot of what I know about the afterlife, I read in communications received 100 plus years ago. And during that time, most of the people who were dying had been very poor. And these poor people had wanted, and, you know, that was before people even had radios much back around the turn of the 20th century. But most of these people were starved for music. So one of the things that they so often talked about was what music is like in the afterlife. And the following things I'm confident are true because we heard about them so much. Number one, if you wanted all your life to learn to play the piano or play an instrument, you can do that in the afterlife. Of course, you have access to your entire mind, so it's much more rapid learning than here. And you can they say they can learn from Mozart, for example. You can learn from big guys how to play the piano or the violin. And they were very excited about this, these people who were suddenly able to do whatever they wanted to do in the afterlife. I mean, some people are prodigies. You know, Joanne, they come in as children, can easily learn to play musical instruments. I'm confident that in their prior lifetime, in terms of earth time, they were able to learn from somebody in the afterlife who really taught them well. And that's why we have some prodigies in a lot of fields, including art. Another thing they told us is that, because back then classical music was what they all cared about in the early decades or decade and a half of the 20th century, one of the things they talked about is the fact that you can go to concerts. All you have to do is put out an intention to hear a certain composer, and whenever there's the internet in their minds, they would get a notice that this person would be playing at this place and time. They'd say, I want to go, and they would be there instantly, and it would be an open air auditorium, the kind that, you know, they had in ancient Greece, and hundreds, thousands of people could be there. Everybody was sitting in the middle of the first row, and they would then hear Mozart give us his new the composition, something he wrote after he had died. Or they would hear, nowadays we know they can hear the Beatles, they can hear, well, actually the ones that are there, John Lennon primarily, they can hear Sinatra, they can hear especially Elvis. We hear from a lot of dead people recently about how Elvis plays all the time. You can have early Elvis, late Elvis, you know, Elvis in the white suit, whatever makes you happy, you can hear. And the music, they say, is so much better in the afterlife that you don't even understand what music sounds like till you get there. We have, it's called mind hearing. We have mind sight and mind hearing, and they're much better than what our minimal ears and eyes are able to give us here. So they say they go, they sit there, and then as they're sitting there, they look up, and the music is creating these gorgeous clouds of color over the whole stadium. And it forms and it makes sometimes shapes, or it's just clouds. So that's what music is like in the afterlife. It's a big deal there, just as many things we think are just normal and part of life are big deals there. Isn't that those great stories? Don't you love that?
Oh my goodness. It's so beautiful. You know, it's really something wonderful to look forward to, because I know there are so many people, I think, that are afraid of dying, and I've never been. And, you know, because I'm always excited about what the possibilities could be. And so to hear from you about how, you know, music is available, you know, after this life, and yet so much more expanded than what we're used to here.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, that's the great thing about studying the afterlife. And this is all real. I mean, I'm not making this up. But the great thing is, whatever you think would be wonderful, it turns out to be better than that. It's like way better, way better than we could ever think up ourselves. And yes, everybody gets to go there. Now, if people have had, as we've talked about at other times, if people have done very negative things, they may have trouble forgiving themselves for having done those things. That's a glitch, and we'll be talking about that more this fall. I have some people coming to talk with us about that. But for nearly all of us, it's just fun. This is playtime like you've never had playtime in your life, and music is a very central part of it. So if you feel like learning to play the piano now and you're 78, it's okay, because you're just getting starting lessons. Go as far as you can, but when you get there, you'll really be able to take off and play piano like you never imagined. So do you have any stories too? I mean, one of the things you pointed out to me is that you like near-death experiences, and that there's music in those. Of course, we know the people who have near-death experiences. We know from people who are actually in the afterlife that a near-death experience is not death. Those people never die, or else they could never come back. But they are extraordinary out-of-body experiences. So what have you heard about music when people are having an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience?
I think what happens is that first everything is black, and then they have light, and then they hear music. And they don't know where it's coming from. They just know they're hearing something. And then, as you mentioned, you were saying in the afterlife, there's all these beautiful colors.
Yes.
So this is what I've heard, is that they will start to hear music. You know, it'll start out ever so faint, like it's a million miles away, right? And then it's almost like the music gets closer and closer and closer to them, and they hear it. And as they're hearing it, they're actually seeing color, and they're seeing colors that they're not even used to seeing with the human eye. It's supposed to be so much more vibrant.
Yes, but also it's different colors, because there's a visible light spectrum, and when we are doing mind sight, where we're not limited by the visible light spectrum. So they say we got colors here you cannot imagine, because they don't appear on Earth, which I think is a neat story.
Yeah.
And what also is neat is what you're talking about really is the love that is shown to people who are out of their bodies for whatever reason. Now, many people are close to death, or they're in a threatening situation, and the comfort that's offered to them in a near-death experience is really, really extraordinary. What else have you heard? I mean, have you talked to anybody who's had an NDE? Sometimes they're not good, though. We just have to point that out. I mean, 1 in 9 apparently is hellish. I'm not sure if that's true, but I have heard it from an expert. So you don't always want to have an NDE, but what's great about them is once you've had a good NDE, you never fear death ever again. That's just the way it is.
That's what I've read. I've read a number of books on near-death experiences. And the thing about the music is they say that the music is so beautiful, even though the music we have here in this world can be, you know, just the most beautiful, amazing thing you've ever heard.
Nothing
compared to what you hear over there.
Because you're hearing it with your mind hearing. If you were born without eardrums, you'll be able to hear during a near-death experience or after death. I mean, it's wonderful and beautiful. People who are born without eyes can see just fine when they're having a near-death experience. So all of these things, if everybody knew all of these things, no one would ever fear death again. I should just mention, too, that when I had my second experience of light, I was 20, and I saw the light, I heard the voice, but there was also music the second time. But it was beautiful, but it was extraordinary because it sounded like a million silver bells, but playing a tune, and it was overwhelmingly beautiful. I just heard a snippet of it. So I've had a little bit of hearing of what it's like when you're hearing. I think of it as the music of the spheres.
You're one of the fortunate ones to be able to have a taste of that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've been basically my whole life was designed for me to be doing the work I'm doing now. So that gave me these teasers, which I have spent the rest of my life pursuing. So at what age should kids start playing music? I mean, is there an ideal time?
I think it actually depends both on the parent and child. But I would say, you know, if a child shows an interest, like I think it's important personally to maybe take your child to like a music and movement group similar to that of music together programs, music and play with Gymboree, Kinder Music, because a lot of that is an introduction to music in their life, you know, outside of the home.
Yes.
And then as you know, once they have that experience, I feel like probably 4 years old would be, even though it's kind of early, I think it might be a good idea to start introducing instruments like a petting zoo. There is a lot of events, you know, that are held, you know, at all different times of the year, like music stores, they'll have instrument petting zoos where you can come in and try out different instruments. Of course, them being 4 years old and trying it out as opposed to them being six or seven, it's going to be different. But if your child is drawn to a particular instrument, I would say, why not? Why not try them with that?
Yes. Well, it's wonderful that music stores will let you do that. But you also have Kids Music Day. What is Kids Music Day?
So Kids Music Day is one of the two music holidays that my awesome husband, Vincent, and I founded a couple of years ago as part of our Keep Music Alive mission. And Kids Music Day is all about promoting the value of music for children and encouraging more children to learn to play an instrument in some shape, way, or form. And as part of Kids Music Day, we partner with hundreds and hundreds of different music schools, music stores, organizations, private instructors to hold events that celebrate or benefit children playing music. And some of those events include instrument petting zoos, where children can come and try out numerous different types of musical instruments. And I think it's great because, you know, a child can go in and say, I've always wanted to learn to play the drums. Well, here they go. There's instructors
Wonderful.
There.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And yes, drums are also musical too. I didn't realize that until recently, but yeah, apparently drums are one of the most ancient musical instruments, and they can be also wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful instruments to play. We're talking about 88 plus ways music can change your life. Tell us what that's about. What's the book about, Joanne?
So 88 plus ways music can change your life. And just real quick on the title, the 88 plus is representative of the 88 keys on the piano and the plus is 88 plus that many stories. So there's over 100 short inspirational stories about how music affected people's lives from around the world, from everyday people to celebrities. And we were, you know, very fortunate to have received so many amazing stories. And with the book, to help us with music education, we actually donate 50% of the proceeds to music education, to other organizations and foundations that are putting music instruments and instruction into schools and communities in need.
Is that what your foundation does, essentially, is to promote music teaching, promote music education?
Yes.
That's the foundation is called Keep Music Alive, and we're going to give contact information in just a couple of minutes. What's Teach Music Week? Is that different from Kids Music Day?
Slightly. So we actually partner with, again, like we do with Kids Music Day, hundreds and hundreds of music schools, stores, and organizations around the world to give free music lessons, and not just to kids, but to adults as well, because, you know, part of our goal is to get more people enjoying learning how to play music and reaping the benefits of learning how to play an instrument. And, you know, there's so many benefits to it, such as, you know, the academic part of it, if you're a student, also the happiness that it brings you, right? When you've accomplished something and then you can play for other people. So yes. Teach Music Week is all about, you know, getting more people to play an instrument and, you know, being happy from it.
Wow. So do you have a website where you talk about all of this? What would be your website for this?
Okay, so for Kids Music Day and for Teach Music Week, they all fall under keepmusicalive.org.
Okay, simple. Keepmusicalive.org. It's the same. It's good that you got your own org, because a lot of people are trying now, and almost everything's taken. But isn't that beautiful? And it, again, as always, if for some reason you're driving, you can't write that down, just send me an email through robertagrimes.com, and I'll make sure you get to the right place. Vincent also writes and sings customized love songs, right?
Does he
still do that? Oh my goodness, he's so much fun. He really is.
Yeah. So yeah, he does. Not as often as he'd like to, because Keep Music Alive keeps him really busy.
I'm sure. But he is such, you have to know him. He's such a delightful person. And he's very serious about helping people really express their love in music. And he will write the song and sing it for you, which I think is just a beautiful thing. I mean, if it's your 30th or 40th wedding anniversary, what a better gift. My husband would never do that, by the way. We've just done 46 years, and I'm sure that's
wow.
The last thing.
Congratulations.
But, thank you. Yeah, I mean, they said it wouldn't last. For a long time, I thought they were right, but apparently, no, it has lasted this long. So can you tell us like a story from the book? Are these are stories about how music helped people or inspired people?
Yes. I'll tell you, there's so many of them. I wish I could just sit here and read them to you, because there's so many beautiful stories. You know, some of the stories will have you cracking up laughing. And then there's the other stories that make you cry, you know, and they're the ones, you know, that give you the goosebumps, and it's like, wow, that was powerful. And I think one that I'd like to share with you is a story. And if anyone, you know, wants to look up some of the stories, they can actually do that on Amazon and read right from the book right on Amazon.
Right.
And,
that's great.
Yeah, because it has one of those little look inside features, so you can read some of the stories.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, so there's one, it's called Remembering You Today, and it's about this fellow, he's a musician, his name is Adam Ezra. You know, he travels all over the country, he's like folky rock kind of music, very talented, and so he was, his band was touring through like Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. And one of his fans, a friend of one of the fans said, hey, you know, we saw you guys were coming through. One of your biggest fans, she's actually dying of cancer. And she really wanted to come out to your show, but she's just not well. And she had gone to a lot of his shows, because he plays all year round, and she had been to so many of his shows, and he never even had met her. But, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, we're on our way back. We're finishing up this leg of the tour. So he actually had his band members drop him off at this lady's house, who he had never even met before. And, So he went to this lady's house. He was there for 6 hours.
Oh, my. Well, what a wonderful man. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Yeah. He was like, you know, if my music means that much to her, who am I to deny her? You know,
yes. So isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. He went there. She was not well. She was, you know, she was upstairs in a hospital bed. She had not been doing well. And, you know, he went in there and he just sat down. And then, you know, when she opened up her eyes, and he sat there and until she opened up her eyes. And, you know, when she opened up her eyes, he was like, hi, you know, and, you know, would you like me to play you a song? And she just like the biggest smile, you know, someone who had not been well. And but yet, you know, this person was here. And they were going to sing songs for her. So,
isn't that amazing? Yes.
Yeah. You know, so he was like, you know, do you want me to play this song? Do you want me to play that song? And he did. And he just made her so happy. And then, you know, it really raised her life condition. You know, she was able to have some strength in her because of the music that Adam was singing to her. So she says, you know, I actually feel like I have some strength right now and I'd like to go downstairs. So, her husband, Bruce, and a friend, they carried her downstairs and they all sat around on the sofa and sang and reminisced and told stories and all kinds of amazing things.
Yes.
And she even started to develop an appetite, which she had not even been eating. So, you know, they were singing and playing and eating and just having a really beautiful time together. And so he felt like that was like the most precious 6 hours, you know, that he had spent. Well, you know, he went back to Massachusetts and found out later that week that she had passed away.
Oh, but what a gift. What a beautiful gift.
Absolutely. You know, what it meant to her and then what he got from it. You know, he's like, the gift was for me.
Yes.
You know, he says it was for her, but it was also for me. What I was able to experience, you know, he says it's incredible. That's not something that happens to you every day.
No, that is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful way to sum up the power of music. It brings people together. They weren't strangers. The music made them part of one family. And what a beautiful thing to do for someone who is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, we've come to the end of our time. But Joanne, it has been so good to have you here. We'll have you and Vincent back, maybe together next time.
Sure.
To tell more stories about music.
We'd love to be back.
Thank you so much for coming. And everyone, as you know, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I am so glad you could be with us today. Never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really get what that means, believe me, it changes everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is going to be Karen Anderson. Karen is a prominent animal communicator, and she'll be telling us about the afterlives of our beloved companion animals. A few years ago, as I think many of you know, I wrote a blog post called Pets in the Afterlife, and Google found it, and now it comes up in a lot of searches. So I hear almost every day, sometimes several times a day, from people who have just lost a beloved pet. And I'm happy to be able to assure you, as I assure them, that on this one fact, the evidence is clear. Every animal you ever have loved is waiting for you now, young, healthy, and in a beautiful, eternal reality where love never ends, and they'll be all over you. And if you've had a lot of dogs or cats, Katie, bar the door, because your human friends will not be able to get near you. Karen has helped many people connect with their pets, and she's going to talk about what she has learned about the afterlife for your beloved animals. So basically, they help us make heaven even more heavenly, the fact that your little friends are going to be there for you. Please join us next week. This week, we've been speaking with Joanne Pierdomenico. One of the things I love, as I say, is sharing Seek Reality with so many people who have visions, gifts, missions of their own. And Vincent and Joanne are a wonderful example of that. They're ambassadors for music. And if ever anything needed ambassadors right now, it's music. So I hope you'll think about reading her book just for the uplifting stories in it, 88 Plus Ways Music Can Change Your Life. And you might think about going to her website, too, and learning more about how you can help children keep music alive, keepmusicalive.org. Lovely, lovely people. And I just think it's wonderful that people are doing this. And if you have a gift that you're sharing with the world, reach out and let me know. Just go to robertagrimes.com because I'm eager to share more people's visions and missions with the world. You all know what my nonfiction books are, and you can buy them just about anywhere. And if you want to talk about anything, don't hesitate to send me a contact through robertagrimes.com. And if you give me your right address, I'll answer your email. You can always find Seek Reality, of course, at webtalkradio.net. And meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy. Please make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you in particular, are a powerful, eternal being, and you in particular are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.